Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:40 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 7th. I thought we'd kick off with U.S. financial conditions. The thing that really sticks out to me by looking at as much back history as we have available is just how tight monetary conditions were back in the early 1980s. So when people start to compare where financial conditions are right now, how high interest rates are, the jump that we've had in inflation, I think it really does help to put into perspective that we're still very much within the longer term range of financial conditions easiness that's been in place really since the 1990s. And if we just draw a horizontal line across here around the 100 level, well, then we can see that there haven't been too many occasions when financial conditions got tighter than that. Now, obviously, there have been occasions, and every one of those has coincided with a recession, most particularly, of course, in 2008 and 2009. But there have been times that I think we might just consider to be medium-term corrections along the way, particularly in 2015 and 16, and then in 2019. Now, obviously, in 2020, the whole world slowed down or shut down and then reopened again, and then monetary conditions went to the easiest they've ever been, and then subsequently rebounded really quite quickly. So now there's obviously the big question: is what we're seeing right now in the stock market a medium-term correction similar to all of those other occasions we've had since 2009? Or is it something more? Are we going to move into what might be deemed to be a secular bear market? But let's just also remember that during the last time when stock market indices just went sideways for a decade, there were occasions where there were easy monetary conditions, when this index was below 100. And that coincided with a good-sized rally between 2004 and 2008. So there are multi-year trends within a secular bear market, but then those secular bear markets tend to be punctuated by deep declines, just like we saw in the period from 2000 to 2003 and 2008 through to the lows that were put in 2009. So that's, I think, the real hallmark of a secular bear market is that the surprises tend to be on the downside, even though there are good-sized rallies in between those surprises. And I think this is by far the most important question. So if monetary conditions continue to advance from here, we would have to conclude that we're moving into a more dangerous period for financial assets. And the NASDAQ 100 today was down about 1%. And it's easing back again now from the early peak that we had in February. So now the big question is it going to hold at the most recent low? And it's really a vital question. The index had rallied enough by that early February peak to break the downtrend, and it's bounced from the region of the 2000-day moving average. And in a secular bull market, generally speaking, we do not see indices or major stocks or asset classes, for that matter, trading below their 1,000-day moving average. So we can go back and just look at this entire bull market that we've had since 2009. Really, since it started to really move in 2010, there has never been an occasion when the NASDAQ traded below the 1,000-day moving average, and that really held true until September of last year. And since then, we've had a good deal of bobbing around. And of course, interest rates are continuing to rise, and a lot of the companies in the NASDAQ are really quite interest rate sensitive. And it's not like these companies don't have cash flows. It's not the same as what we had in 2000. Now, back in 2000, there were lots of companies like those that the ARK Innovation ETF invests in that don't have earnings. So, when we look at this index, well, it has collapsed and given up all of the pandemic and post-pandemic surge. And now the bigger question is how many of these companies will survive. But when we look at the major constituents of the NASDAQ, well, Apple, for example, still has a ton of cash, 165 billion, and is throwing off 97 billion in free cash flow this year. So they're still selling a lot of products, even if there is a high degree of cyclicality within the industry. But that doesn't mean that the share has to go up all the time. And it's certainly been coming down over the course of the last year. So even with a stellar balance sheet and with a very profitable business, the future is very much dictated by earnings and relative to what can be got from the risk-free rate over time. And over the period from 2020 through to 2022, well, there wasn't a hurdle rate. There was no, there wasn't a discount rate because interest rates were so low. And now we're going through one of the fastest hiking cycles in history. So now we do have a discount rate, and those future cash flows have to be progressively more impressive the higher that discount rate goes. And that might not be readily apparent. It would be hard to say that Apple is going to find another billion or 2 billion customers, or at least 2 billion customers for phones that cost well in excess of $1,000. It seems to be a bit of an ask. And they're obviously building out their advertising revenue, and they're trying to generate more income from wearables and from the App Store. But that's not a hit new product. And the reality is that just about every company is now looking at trying to generate additional income from advertising. Well, I think that was most particularly evident today from Meta. So they're going to go through another round of firing large numbers of people. Now it's, I think, worth considering that the share did double from the low in the fourth quarter up to the peak in early February. So at least some consolidation, I think, is warranted here, and we can probably anticipate that we're going to get a good share of ranging between about $150 and $200. And then subsequently, we'll see what happens after that. Are we going to move into a lengthier process of ranging? And hopefully, eventually, they will give up on this whole metaverse growth trajectory. And probably try and migrate back into generating sufficient income from social media. And I think that is something that could be lengthy, and it would also contribute to a ranging environment overall. So when we look at some of the major constituents of the NASDAQ, their valuations are very much impacted by the rising discount rate, less than the availability or otherwise of cash flows. Then you have Amazon. Now, Amazon has just changed how it gives space to the sellers. And from the forums I've seen, most people are really not happy about it. And they're also taking up to and often in excess of half of the sales price for the services that they provide. So that's something that is not great news for sellers on Amazon. It means they have to raise prices to protect their margins or even to ensure they have a margin. It means that Amazon is becoming an increasingly more expensive place to shop, and the share is trending downwards. And I think this is really quite this really should be paid attention to because it suggests that the wealthier portion of the consuming class, the people that have the Amazon Prime subscriptions, well, the performance of the share is suggesting that they're not buying as much. And Lululemon, as I was mentioning yesterday, rolling over, that's not great news either. But Salesforce has popped on the upside and has so far held that move. So one thing that I think is most likely within the cloud computing sector is that we're going to get some significant consolidation. At the moment, there are basically three different ways of investing in cloud. You have the physical cloud, so that's going to be the data centers. And Amazon is one of those, Microsoft is another, Google is one of those. Then you have the software providers. So Salesforce is one of those. And it purchased Slack, so that's basically a new version of email, although I would say that Monday is probably a better product. But then do you have the in-between bits? So it's the bits of software and the kinds of products that you don't see from a customer's perspective, but that they work with the data and they interface with the software to provide actual cloud services. The problem with that particular portion of the market is that either one of the others can replicate it quite quickly. There's no real moat. There's nothing to protect those companies from any other company from basically copying what they do. And I suspect that when we look at some of these smaller cloud companies, well, they're going to have a hard time rallying. So we're going to get, I think, quite a bit of distillation within the cloud computing sector. Some companies will thrive, others will evaporate over the course of the next couple of years. So, of course, we had Jay Powell talking today, and he was rather strident in saying that the peak of interest rates has not yet been found, and that the economy is stronger than they were anticipating. So the 10-year yield is hovering here around 4%, and the 2-year yield is around 5%. So the USA now has real positive real interest rates. In fact, it's had those for a while. So let me see if I can actually find the chart. And I'm going to see if I can remember the ticker. Well, they were, when we look at constant maturity rates, they were negative 1% back in 2021. Now they're 1.53%. That's higher than at any point for positive real rates going all the way back to 2010. So that's also part of the reason why gold hasn't been doing better. And because of these hawkish statements that the Federal Reserve made today, the dollar index was up in a pretty dynamic manner. And that is a new recovery high. And it is pushing back above the exponential moving average. And gold then pulled back by about $30. And is coming back down towards that psychological $1,800 level. So it remains very much in lockstep with the dollar, and not least because we do have positive real interest rates, at least on a constant maturity basis. But even when we look at CPI, CPI is around just 6.4%, and the Fed funds rate isn't really all that far away. So if interest rates continue to rise from here, then we could have, just in very bald terms, short-term rates that are higher than CPI. And of course, that is rather restrictive in terms of monetary conditions. And when we think about broader financial conditions, well, the stock market plays a bigger role, in those financial condition charts that I put up right at the beginning of this broadcast. So there's obviously the potential then that the Federal Reserve is much more intent than the market was willing to give credence to, that they're going to continue to raise rates. And it's not that difficult to understand why. the cost of servicing the national debt rises with interest rates. But provided rates go back down again afterwards, it's not that big a deal. But if, on the other hand, they do not get control of inflation and inflation gets out of control and trends for years at a time, which was what happened in the 1970s, well, then the cost of servicing the debt becomes not just a problem, but an existential problem. So the Fed really does have to get in control of inflation now, and it does suggest that they will continue to raise rates until unemployment starts to rise. So I think it's one of the things that we really should be paying attention to is the jobless rate. Now, of course, this is also getting to be a rather difficult thing to monitor because of that enormous spike in 2020. So then we can definitely see that it's not really moving and hasn't moved much in the last year. It's hovering here around 200,000 jobs. And with the jolts at still, it eased a bit, but it's still exceptionally high. And we're looking at a figure that's like 11 million people. So if you've only got a jobless rate that isn't really moving, and you've got a number of job openings that's rising, it's pointing to a really strong economy. Now, I'd be willing to bet that a lot of the jobs that are posted aren't real jobs. And but that doesn't mean that there's 11 million of them are like that. There's obviously a lot of demand out there, but most particularly in the low-end part of the market. And a lot of the job losses that we've seen so far are in the white-collar sector. So there's a bit of a reordering going on in the market right now, and that's going to take time. And I think most particularly, there were lots of companies, particularly within the corporate sector, that were able to stretch maturities during the pandemic. So we're not seeing the same kind of pressure on credit right now that we would in a normal cycle, because a lot of refinancing took place in 2020 when rates were exceptionally low. But where we are seeing pressure is in the government sector because of the constant need for refinancing. And then we're also seeing it within the commercial real estate sector because they have buildings that are vacant, so they're not getting income. And then when they have to refinance, it's going to come in, or new leases come in at a substantially lower level. So that's why defaults are rising. And it's also why companies like Blackstone and Brookfield are still trending downwards. And Blackstone is easing back now from the region of the 200-day moving average. I think we're definitely also going to start to see people looking a lot more at cash. So, for example, we look at a company like Zillow. They have cash and equivalents of about 3.3 billion and a market cap of about 9.7 and debt of 1.8. So that's not a company that's going to be particularly pressured. Of course, if their business collapses, they might go through some difficult quarters, but the chances are they'll survive, and it's anticipated that they'll at least be positive in cash flow for the next couple of years. So it might be difficult to make an argument for growth, but existential risk is not nearly as pressing. And then let's think about just another company in a very similar situation, except that now we have cash is reasonable, but then debt is much higher. So this is obviously a more levered company. Now, they expect to make even more money than Zillow does. And that does seem to be rather interesting because it's a more levered company, and they've been They've been saddled with all those the properties that they overpaid for, and the share is still trending downwards. So the most levered companies in any sector, those that have more debt relative to their cash, are going to come under pressure. Those that are more cash rich, less debt, are going to be in a much better position. And of course, the former group are those that are more likely to default. So it's not like every company had the opportunity to refinance, and some are obviously going to be in a better position than others. But the Federal Reserve is going to keep going, I think, until they eventually break something. And I suspect that it is at the commercial real estate sector that is the eye of the storm here, because there will be some portions of that market really run into trouble, because most people don't want to have to go back to the office. A lot of people really like working from home, and a lot of people have decided to retire, and they're definitely not going back to the office. Or at least they won't until their financial condition deteriorates enough to encourage them to take jobs. And that would suggest that we're going to have to see some living standard erosion before people are encouraged back into the offices. And that is probably what the Federal Reserve is also looking for. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.